Thanks for tuning in to the Falcon Theater Podcast. I'm your host, Dean Jansen, mild-mannered manager of the Falcon Theater in Tisdale, Saskatchewan. Together with my son, Noah Jansen, the self-professed movie snob, we're going to enlighten and entertain you with our immense movie knowledge. So sit back and relax. But if you're currently driving a vehicle, don't relax too much. But enjoy this episode of the Falcon Theater Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 15th episode of the Falcon Theater Podcast. I can't believe that we've actually made it to 15 episodes, Noah.
It feels weird. Like when we were getting the notes set up, and I was like, I had a look. I was like, has it actually been 15 already? Like, that's just, it seems wild to me that we've done that many. We've already been doing it for like, what, like a year and a half already?
Yeah, we've had a couple of pretty good gaps in this last year, but
if we were keeping up with our original schedule, we'd probably already be at episode 30. But it's been slowing down a little bit.
Ah, life gets in the way, right?
Yeah, allegedly.
I thought really that once I retired, I would have more time, but I'm finding
you're more busy than you were when you were teaching.
Exactly. Yeah. So we have another special guest here tonight with us. And I don't like reading things per se on the Falcon Theater Podcast, but I'm going to read this guy's IMDb bio because it's really cool, I think. Our guest tonight is Rylan Alexan. And Rylan was a former student of mine. Thank goodness I have former students that have gone out and made something of themselves and then want to actually come back and talk to their teacher. Rylan Alexan is a Vancouver-based actor, writer, producer, and director from Tisdale, Saskatchewan. It actually says that in his bio on IMDb. Rylan made the move to Vancouver in 2011 to attend Vancouver Film School. And after graduating from Vancouver Film School, he began pursuing his career as an actor and has since appeared in several TV shows, independent films, and commercials. Rylan's career as a producer, writer, and director also began to take off shortly after graduating film school, starting with the independent short films. Rylan's career soon expanded into feature films. He has since worked as a producer on several projects, which has taken him to different parts of the world to work with many seasoned writer, actor, producer, and crews. And we're going to get him to tell us a little bit about those things a little bit later in the podcast. So welcome, Rylan, to the 15th episode of the Falcon Theater Podcast.
I am happy to be here, man. I love the Falcon Theater.
I'm just curious,
I don't think all my old teachers like me, but I like all my old teachers.
Some of them are okay.
While I'm being recorded on a podcast, absolutely.
when are you going to get your own sign outside of Tisdale?
Well, we're working on that. Yeah, I want a little bit bigger one next to
Brent Butt. Has all these credits. I mean, what has Brent Butt done? He did Corner Gas. That's thing his only credit.
Yeah, that wasn't much. Hey, that Corner Gas show.
What TV show?
Yeah, man, he put the weight of Saskatchewan on his shoulders there for about 10 years.
You know, speaking of your favorite teachers, and I don't want to like pit you one against another because I know my wife and I both taught you, and probably I was your favorite. But I just want to tell a little story that she loves to tell, and I don't know, you probably might remember this, but she was your drama teacher, wasn't she?
Yes, she absolutely was.
Yeah, and she likes to tell a little story about how for the drama wind-up at the end of the year, somebody showed up to the school drama wind-up with some beer. Who was that, Rylan?
I don't know who that would have been. I think I was around that person. I couldn't have been that person.
I think that's one of her favorite stories now. Looking back, it wasn't at the time, but now looking back, that's one of her favorite stories.
Yeah, I think I cracked one as I walked out the door, and it wasn't as funny as I planned on, but I actually, fun fact, when I had to apply for Vancouver Film School, and we had to write about somebody who inspired us from our life in, you know, in that space, I actually wrote a little thing about your wife, because she like you said, she was my drama teacher, and she was so bought in on all of us, and just kind of arts was such a big thing, and she got a little spiel in my VFS application as somebody who inspired me in town because of all that she did do for me in that time span, actually. I don't know if she knows that or not.
I don't know. She will know it once she listens to the podcast. I won't tell her ahead of time. I'll let her listen to it. That's awesome.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you had brought wine to the drama thing, she probably would have been okay with you having it there. Just because it was beer.
Yeah, exactly. Lessons learned.
She does prefer her wine to beer.
Okay, now I know. Now I know for next time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I want to talk, before we get into who Rylan is and what he's done, I want to talk a little bit about what's happening at the Falcon Theater. And our August lineup is actually really good. We have coming up, we have Superman, which apparently is a really good movie. We have Bad Guys 2, The Bad Guys 2, which is a kid's movie. I think it's the same guys that did, gone from my head. The Cat, Puss in Boots, the latest. I think it's the same ones that did the Puss in Boots.
I was going to say Cat in the Hat, but it was instead Cat in Boots.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we got The Naked Gun, which is getting great reviews.
It looks so good.
Yeah. And then just before school gets back into session, we have The Smurfs. So people can bring their kids before they got to send them back to school. And then we're hoping the start of September, first weekend of September, we get the Fantastic Four movie. So yeah, pretty good lineup.
I read your F4 note and I thought you had a typo for that F1 movie with Brad Pitt. And I was like, oh, did he mean to put, I realized that it's now Fantastic Four.
I just didn't feel like typing out Fantastic Four, so I just put F4.
That's fair. That's fair.
I thought the same thing. I was pretty sure that was meant to be F1.
I mean, there's a good chance I would have forgotten between typing it and now, but thankfully I remembered.
This movie's horrible. There's no cars.
So, also, I have kind of a big announcement. It's with a heavy heart that I'm announcing that I'm going to be resigning, or I actually have resigned as manager of the Falcon Theater.
Boo.
Yeah, I know. It was one of the hardest decisions. I actually had a harder time writing that resignation letter than I did writing my teaching resignation letter. I mean, I will stay on until they find a new manager, or, well, I told them I would stay on until the end of 2025. I don't want to be there in January because we're going away, but if they find a manager sooner, I'll step down. But I'm still going to be involved. I can still help out. I'll still help with the website, and I'll still go in if they need somebody for a weekend. I'll be happy to go in and help out. It's just mother and I want to travel, and this gig just keeps us from being able to do that. So
you retire from teaching and then you become more busy. Now you retire from this, man, you're going to be so busy after all this.
Oh, let me tell you, I'm hoping that maybe one day I will have grandkids that make me busy, but you know, that's what I'm planning for. I'm getting ready for that.
You tell Eric to get busy.
Oh, I've told him. He won't listen. Yeah, that's my big announcement. I'm still going to be part of it, helping out, but I'm hoping it'll be a little bit less so that I can go away and do things and enjoy my retirement more.
Well, hey, I know I talked about it to you on the phone a little bit, but on behalf of Tisdale and those of us who grew up going there, thanks for stepping up at a time when it needed it. Because having that theater closed down would have been devastating for myself and I mean infinite others. So thank you for doing what you did do.
Thanks, Rylan. I appreciate that. And I still want to see it keep going, and I want to make sure that it does. But I'm hoping that somebody else can take the reins and keep it moving forward.
It's just going to be so awkward for me to be on the podcast with somebody else now.
We will still do the Falcon Theater podcast. I'm not stopping it. I'm not changing the name. We just, we might not have insider information like we do now. Okay, so Rylan, let's come back to you now that we've got that over with. So what is it you do?
Okay, well, I mean, I guess the way that I would describe that the simplest is I am a modern day filmmaker in every sense of the word, in that I kind of have done a little bit of everything, as that bio so explained. I think that was written for one of the past movies I did. They needed me to look fancy, so they wrote that up. I went to Vancouver Film School there for acting, and I was never that good of an actor, let's just be honest. So but in the process of trying to figure that out, I started just doing kind of everything. I started, you know, getting behind the scenes and kind of working every position and kind of fell in love with the whole filmmaking process. And really, nowadays you kind of have to be able to, you know, be versatile in this industry. So yeah, I do. I've done on the largest scale. I'm a producer, I would say. I also have a little commercial side of my business that my business partner runs, and so he kind of runs the commercial side, and I'm doing the film side. And we're working towards a film that we're, you know, hopefully talk about today. And I am a, as I said, director, writer, producer, all of the above, out of necessity, I would say, and most of them out of love, some of them out of necessity. But yeah, producing and directing being the top two, and those are where I have the most fun for sure.
Okay, so that brings up two points for me. Number one, so you're like jack of all trades, master of all.
Stretch. Jack of all trades, working on being a master of a few. How about that?
That's good. Secondly, you said you were never a very good actor. So I have to ask, what do you think makes a very good actor then?
Ooh.
You know, I've been asked this question a lot since I got more into producing and directing and taking on a lot more, watching a lot more audition tapes and things like that, and just going through hundreds and hundreds of those in my life now. And I think there is just an ease that comes with a good actor. There is actors that look like they're trying too hard. There is actors that it just doesn't feel natural. And there's those people. And I think it can be taught to a certain extent. And I think it can't be taught to a certain extent. I think it's kind of like anything. There's natural talent, and then there's talent that can be worked for. And with acting, I think it's a combination of both. It's just a freedom to play, a freedom to just let every second be unique and different, but also know what you're doing and have a direction that you're going in. And I think that the combination of the two, I could never do. And that's how I ended up directing, because I was, every millisecond I was going, oh, should I said that? I've said that like that. Oh, I should have hit that harder. Oh, I should be more mad now, you know? And I was kind of analyzing myself on the run. And I think maybe that's why I ended up in the director's chair, because I can kind of do that. That's why I was not very good. And what I think is good, I guess, if that made any sense.
And that's like the director has a huge role in getting that out of the actor,
For sure. And I think that's a big part of it, where, you know, the actor has to bring something, and then the director, to me, the actor brings something and the director tries to shape it, you know, in the way that they see fit. And I think that's what I'm looking for when I'm watching tapes or whatever it may be. Look, you know, auditions, I'm looking for somebody who's bringing something, somebody who's doing something unique, somebody who is, who's bringing a point of view to the character. And then it comes down to me to go, okay, maybe we dial it back on that part. You know, I think in this moment they're thinking a little bit more this way. Let's pull back on that. And the best actors find a way to do that without getting lost in it. You know, they go, okay, and it just, they're able to flow through those adjustments. And that's what I always try to do when I'm directing. And I mean, I tried to do it when I was acting. Like I said, maybe not that good. But yeah, I think that dance between the actor and the director is probably where I have the most fun, period, in what I do.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that is. That's cool. That, I've said for years, and no one, I've talked about this in the past, but whenever there's a big movie coming out, the actors are the ones that do the press gambit. They're the face of the franchise, if you will. But really, it should be the directors and producers that do that press, because they actually know what's going on. The actors really, for sometimes, don't even really know what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, and I think a lot of directors too, like, unless they are like, you know, the certain directors that have become the household names that are almost a star themselves, those ones kind of do get involved a bit. But like, how many directors are, it's like people don't even know who it was that directed it, but they know that Ryan Gosling was in the
movie. Exactly. And the actors, I think, and this is something I learned going to VFS, where the actors were, you know, they're the personalities most of the time, you know, a lot of directors, because like I said, we can tend to be a little neurotic. We can tend to be a little hyper-focused on certain moments and certain things. Sometimes we don't do the best on podcasts and things like that, whereas the actors can just kind of fly a little bit more. So I think that does benefit me as a director, to be honest, too, coming from the acting world and seeing in my own shortcomings in the acting space and everything. I think that helps as a director. But yeah, I agree that let's get the directors' names up there nice and big. And we're also not typically as pretty as the actors, I guess. That's a factor.
Yeah, that could be sometimes true.
What was it that kind of got you into, like, say, coming from small town Tisdale, where there's no real film program at all? You know, there's the theater program, which is drastically, you know, different than acting behind a screen, you know, having to do the multiple takes. So what was it that kind of got you into being like, I'm graduating high school, I enjoy doing drama, now I want to go and pursue acting? And then, well, as you know, it turned into that. But what was kind of like the push for that? Because I mean, me myself, I coming out of high school, I went in for theater acting.
Yeah,
I loved the theater part. It was all the other classes that I apparently had to go to, but that's not important. But it is, like, I've done a couple little behind, like you know, YouTube videos thing. It's very different. So what was kind of like the push from coming from doing theater in high school to I want to pursue this as a career in film?
Yeah, I think it was exactly what we were just talking about. I think if I'm being honest, the vanity, the face on the poster was part of it. I think that also it's just I had to make a decision of kind of just what was viable. And I know that, like, theater acting is something that a lot of people throw themselves into and have great careers at. And for myself, again, like you said, coming from Tisdale, doing a year in Saskatoon, going out to Vancouver, like, I really had to kind of find my way through it. And I it was almost easier, to be honest, to find opportunities in that, you know, film and television space. You know, if you want to go to university and do theater, you could do that. But really, you know, it's a lot easier to find, you know, little ways in and take little shots at the film and TV stuff. And I think that's just kind of the way that it happened. And yeah, I wouldn't have changed the way that it played out at all. I would say now, looking back on it. But the theater, I've also done a couple of plays actually, and that's fun. And that's real, like, that's real in the moment stuff. And it's that is just fantastic. But I think it's a bit of a smaller world, and you really got to kind of figure out how to get in there. And to be honest, I just never really did.
It's a little bit more niched.
Yeah, I think, yeah, there's just, you know, there's not as many plays going on as there is commercials and TV shows and things to audition for and that kind of stuff. And then, that, you know, even the couple plays that I did do, you know, you're into long rehearsals and stuff like that. And that's where, you know, you have the most fun. I had some of the most fun I've ever had in my life rehearsing for some plays that I've done in Vancouver. But it ended up being few and far between. And I ended up getting into the kind of the film, the producing side of things a little bit, you know, around that same time and kind of, you know, followed the scent, I guess, that way.
Yeah. Noah and I both did some dinner theater. I mean, small town dinner theater stuff together. And it was a blast working with each other doing that. But it's just the rehearsal can be so much fun, especially when you're off book and everybody's off book and you can kind of play with your role then. And I always loved that part of it.
But it is a huge time commitment. Like, there's times that I think I'm like, oh, I'd love to go back and do more theater, but it's busy. It's not like you can, okay, we're going to come in for these couple days and do this things, then we can come back the next day and do some stuff, you know?
That's exactly it. I mean, how many actors can, you know, you can pop into a job for 5 days, 4 days, 2 days, I mean, one day and be in and out and on a film or TV job. Whereas, yeah, that theater is more of an undertaking, but it is also so fun and so fulfilling. And I think that's why you see some of these big dog actors end up going back and doing Broadway plays in their 50s and, you know, living that side of things once they have the freedom to be able to do that. So many actors go back that way because it is so, so fun and, you know, so fulfilling, but time consuming as well.
So I've looked back through your credits on Internet Movie Database, and you've got quite a good list of credits there. I'm curious, what's your favorite thing that you have done previously, and why was it called Hitler's Last Stand?
Yeah, actually, that is a good call. That was so cool for me. I mean, I had such a World War II buff kind of background. That actually started with that unit we had to do in grade 7 on World War II. That got me interested there. And yeah, that was so cool. I did that one, and then Hell Below as well was just like one of those reenactors. It was basically like one of those shows where, you know, they tell the story and then they cut to actors showing it happen. And I was supposed to be like navigating on a submarine, and then the Hitler's Last Stand one was so cool too. They had all like authentic, you know, or like remade uniforms and weapons. And I actually watched the episode that I was in, and they were changing us out into different uniforms, and I watched the episode and I'm like, oh, there's me. And then it cuts to the German shooting, and I'm like, oh, that is also me shooting at me. Nobody else would have noticed that but me. But yeah, that was so cool. Just like reenacting scenes. They had little cannons going off and explosions, and we're ducking. And it was the closest thing I've done to my Saving Private Ryan at this point. And so yeah, that one was super cool.
Awesome. Noah and I are both World War II buffs. We both love watching World War II stuff, reading World War II stuff. So, when I read that, I'm like, oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah, I'll have to see if I can dig up that episode. I'll have to try to find it. That was like I think I was there 4 or 5 days. It was pretty sweet. I might have even done it. It might have been a couple episodes, actually. That was a little bit ago. But yeah, that was a fun few days. I was the only one who could drive the drive standard amongst the cast, so I got to drive the old World War II Jeep around for a few days. That was sweet.
Hey, that's how you get roles. Isn't that the guy from Seinfeld, the guy in the coffee shop? He's the only guy who could work the espresso machine, so he got to be the coffee guy.
There you go. That's fair. I didn't know that. That's cool.
You're doing a Noah Knows before the Noah Knows section.
I didn't even know.
So how can we watch that? Does it stream somewhere?
Yeah, that stuff, I'm not sure. That was done for like History Channel and Smithsonian Channel, those like reenactment things. I'm not sure where those are streaming, to be honest, anymore. I think through History Channel or whatever, if you looked online, you could definitely find them. And then the other movie stuff that I've done, like on the producer side of things, has been on Tubi thus far. So there's a couple movies that I helped, that I was a producer on Tubi. We can get into that as we go too. But I think those are probably the main things that are streaming around. I don't know. I'd have to look. I'll see if I can dig it up. But yeah, definitely History Channel somewhere for those Hitler's Last Stand episodes.
Yeah, we'll have to look that up. I'm interested to watch it now. Well, I mean, I would have been interested before, but now I'm really interested.
Yeah, see if you can spot me shooting at myself.
So what would be your favorite project that you've done, like besides doing the awesome war stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. It's just they all have their own differences, right? I mean, if we look at a project like The Sinners was like, you know, something that I was a producer on, that was kind of the first thing that I got involved in. I got to learn how, you know, how a film gets made and how it gets sold and how that all goes. That was obviously a cool thing. And then Into Chapel was the next one. And that one, I got to be in Utah for 3 months shooting that movie with, you know, some people that I knew from TV and movies back in the day. That was a cool, and that was kind of my, you know, my first kind of big boy grown up job, as you know, on the producer side of things as well. That was cool for that. And then the most fun I've had has been recently with Expiry Date and the short film version that we did with like a 20 minute short proof of concept that I directed and wrote, and that we're working on the feature version of now. And that's been the coolest thing just for me, because that gets me into my writing and directing and everything that I want to do just on the biggest scale that I've been able to do it on. So those three stand out to me as kind of the biggest, and all for their own reasons. But yeah, I'm having fun with expiry date right now and how that's going. And I had fun with the short, and I'm having fun on, you know, in pre-production on the feature. And so, yeah, that's taking the cake for now, for sure.
Tell us about expiry date. Noah and I watched the short that you sent us, and I've got it was amazing to start with, but tell us about it.
Yeah. So, we've got the short film right now, feature upcoming. It's about two 20-something cancer patients that meet at a support group and live out their last few months together. But it's funnier than it sounds, is the way that I always kind of break that down. I feel like I got to throw that little caveat in at the end. I wouldn't exactly call it a dark comedy. It's pretty dramatic. There's comedic moments. I mean, like you guys have seen it there. The female character is pretty abrasive and outgoing, and the male's a little bit more subdued and dialed back, and I think some of their interactions provide some comedy and some levity in some of those more serious moments. And a lot of it, well, pretty much all of it is taken from different parts of my life and the stuff that my family has gone through and dealt with, or conversations that I've seen or been a part of, and kind of going from there. Actually, the story started with I was chatting with a couple of my friends. We were looking at, you know, producing, making a short film, and the conversation came up, what if you knew right at the beginning that two main characters were going to die? And I kind of thought, and I immediately just thought of, like I said, my life and my family and kind of things we've gone through. And I sat down, I wrote that in like a night. And I think we added one little two-page bit, not even two-page, maybe a page and a half bit into that. Otherwise, it's pretty much exactly what I wrote the first night. And yeah, now here we are working on the feature. And yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So when I watched it, like it's heavy, it's some heavy stuff. And I've always heard, you know, write what you know. And when I was watching it, Rylan, I was seriously, I was like, how does he know this? Like it's so well written. It's so believable. I'm like, he obviously has like, a background here, because you could feel it, and yet the lightness and levity of the actors, the acting, the production value is fantastic, the acting is great, but the writing of it was what really caught my attention.
Well, I appreciate that. That's awesome. Most people shout out the cinematography first, and I am one of those people, because Chris, the cinematographer, made it look like better than I could have ever envisioned it looking. I'm super happy with the work that he did on that, and he's going to shoot the feature length as well. So it'll have a similar look, which I'm excited about. And yeah, writing wise, a lot of it came from, I grew up with 8 different grandparents. My mom was adopted, and then she met her birth parents, and both grandmas had been remarried. And so I ended up having relationships with 8 different grandparents, called 8 different people, grandma and grandpa, growing up. So that, with that came a lot of Christmas presents, which was nice, but as we went along, so too, I mean, came some, you know, health issues and things like that. And I got to see, and so 3 of them battle through cancer, and one in particular, my mom's birth mom had every form of cancer imaginable through, I think, over a span of 20, 30 years. She battled with everything. And as I grew up and had, you know, more conversations with her and kind of heard about what she went through and the surgeries she's had and the chemo she did and the bad and her mindset and just everything. And as she aged and how that all changed, I didn't really get it when I was younger, but then as I kind of grew up, I had some good conversations with her that I think impacted a lot of that. And then actually had a good friend of mine that had cancer when she was younger as well, and kind of talked to her about that. And yeah, it was kind of about combining what I had seen and what I've been through in seeing my family go through and deal with, and combine that with kind of being young and what I feel, you know, and what I'm going through, and what I, you know, if this were to happen to me today, the way that it happened to my grandma, you know, when she was even younger than I am, you know, and what does that kind of look like? And I just kind of, yeah, I just pulled a lot of the conversations that I've had over the years and that came out, and then the feature is more of it.
Well, and I think something about it too, that I like, it's only 20 minutes, the short there, but it conveys just so much in that 20 minutes. Like I was watching it and I felt like it was like and not in like a bad way, like in a good way. Like it felt 40 minutes, like as in like it was, there was so much packed into such a short period of time. And the way that the character was able to convey, like I was able to understand the personality and like kind of fill in my own blanks of who these characters were before these moments, you know, and like what they would have been like leading up to these moments through just how they interact with each other and how they take the news and how they're wanting to kind of like push forward and stuff like that. The more timid nature and like kind of you said, the more abrasive nature of the female, it really, you know, shows who they truly are and how they're reacting to, you know, this life-changing event and the rest of their lives, essentially.
Nice. Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad it made an impact. And yeah, that's something that, I mean, even the length, like everyone told me it's too long. Don't make something that long. Cause if you're trying to get into festivals, like you want to go a little bit shorter than that typically, just because they cram, you know, they do shorts blocks where they'll put a number of short films into an hour and a half chunk, and that's how they'll do it. So, you know, you can put three 7-minute ones or one of our 21-minute ones in there. So everyone was on me, but it, you know, don't make a film that long. But it kind of, I'm glad that we did. I'm glad that we stuck to it and did what we did, because now, you know,
it doesn't feel rushed. Then you still get to spend some time with these characters, and you get to in that 20 minutes grow a bit of a bond with them and understand who they are. And because I feel like if it was shorter, it would have been like, oh, okay, well, that's the end of it. But it lets you kind of just sit. I'm always a big fan. I always like longer movies. I like spending time just sitting there and understanding who the characters are. And again, it gives you more time to think about, you know, what you're seeing on screen as well. So I think that's in my opinion better, but what do I know?
Appreciate that. No, and that's exactly what I was going for. Like, let's make the best thing we can make rather than let's try desperately to get into these festivals, you know, that won't take us at 20 minutes, but would take us at 14, like, whatever, you know. That's not the way that I want to be making stuff. You know, I want to make good things. So here we are.
I agree. The cinematography was incredible. The lighting, the use of lighting in it was amazing. But I am number one. I'm character driven in any story. If I don't care about the characters, I don't care about the story. And I cared about your characters. Like, and I wanted more. Like 20 minutes. Yeah, and I can see why this would be a feature film, because I want more. I want to know more about them. I want to follow their journey.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the feature becomes. Like, we get more into their families, and Milton, the main character, gets kind of a mentor character that he meets at his treatments that is based entirely on my grandma. And yeah, they kind of get into what that experience is like a little bit. A lot deeper. So all this talking about it, we haven't released the short yet. I might have to do that. We're going to have to just drop a link to the short or something so people can know what we're talking about.
You are okay with it. When I post the episode, I'll be happy to drop the link, but
yeah, that'd be perfect. This is great. This is a funny timing, because we were looking at for a way to kind of get it out into the world. We were saving it for certain festivals and stuff. You have to be a premiere and things like that. And we're moved on to the feature here at this point. We were looking at a way to get it out. So maybe this is a good way to get it out. This is perfect. Via the Falcon Theater. That's not a lifelong dream of mine. Come on. This is perfect.
Is there any, like, was there any specific, like, you know, works in the past, like movies or even like books or something like that, that, you know, you drew any sort of like inspiration from, that are like, you know, hey, I like how they do it in this movie where they have, you know, even say like a shot set up like this, or, you know, certain dynamics like this, that you're like, this even maybe subconsciously kind of inspired you to, you know, do a certain thing for the short film and soon to be the feature?
Yeah, I think I tend to gravitate towards just certain, I mean, certain filmmakers at certain moments I kind of tend to lock in on. And I think that right around the time that we were doing this, it was kind of, we were just after like Oppenheimer time. And I really liked the way, like, that a lot of the stuff with Robert Downey Jr. and a lot of the black and white stuff was shot on really wide lenses, and even the close-ups, it's all very wide. And this one felt like, you know, it was like they had some movement in it, but it was, you know, a lot of the shots were paintings. And that was what Chris said, the cinematographer. He said each you know, we're not going to have a lot of movement here in this. So each shot has got to feel like a painting. And that was kind of what we tried to go for. And then I think I kind of, another guy who inspires me is the, I would say is Wes Anderson, in the sense that that's a guy just doing what he likes and taking a swing. And that style could work or not work for the world. And it, thank God it's worked. The Grand Budapest Hotel, man, that is to this day my favorite movie. And I think that I tried to work some of that into the short too, some of their back and forth, some of the pauses, some of the timing, not Wes Anderson at all, but just fearlessly what I want to write, you know, not trying to be anything else, not trying to be anything but the timing, playing with the timing. Some of it's, you know, maybe based in reality, some of it they talk a little bit quicker than maybe we do a lot of times, you know, giving it a little bit of the flair and the style that I like as a writer, like that style. And then, like I said, I mean, yeah, how do you go wrong watching a Chris Nolan movie and taking any kind of advice from that? So those two definitely, I think, have stood out for me over the last few years for sure, and definitely influenced it.
Well, definitely props to the cinematographer too. Yeah, like you said, like the first, even from the first couple of shots, like in the doctor's office, I was like, oh, I'm a big sucker for cinematography, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna like this just off of those first couple shots and like the way he was framing the characters and everything. And
Matt, I'll send you some shots from that day, because actually they were not even facing each other. We had to.
Oh, really?
That room was had one wall of books. So we put the doctor up against the wall of books, but the rest of the room didn't look that great. And we didn't find that location till late, and we had to make it work. So the doctor shot onto the books, and then we turned everything 90 degrees or 45 degrees, I guess, and then shot all the stuff with Milton looking the other way. So that's some movie magic on that one.
Really, look at that, really, hey.
We weren't even facing each other. We had to fake that whole room.
Yeah, gotta love movie magic. That's awesome. Oppenheimer's one of my absolute favorite movies of all time. I would sit down and watch that movie anytime, because I just absolutely love the way it's done. I love the content because I'm a physics guy, but I love the way that movie was done.
I think I've seen it 5 times since it came out last year or the year before, whatever. Like, it's just so fantastic.
Who is the coolest person that you've met, or is have you met somebody that made you kind of giddy? I guess is what
starstruck.
Man, starstruck. That is a good question. Actually, you know what? A guy who became a buddy throughout the course of that shoot was on Chapel. Our lead actor was Jeremy Sumpter, who played Peter Pan in the Peter Pan movie that I like grew up watching. Like, when I think about Peter Pan, I think about Jeremy. And then when I met him as an adult and he was working on our movie, and then got to know him a lot over the course of that shoot. And I was down in LA and I saw him when I was down in LA, and that was a pretty funny one to just see, like, this kid that I grew up watching, you know, watching that movie. And then we were making a movie together down the line. That was a pretty cool one. And now, like I said, he's a goofball buddy now. So that's a cool one.
That's awesome.
So many people. Yeah. So just so many cool people through this whole thing. But yeah, that was probably the moment where I was like, oh man, I'm making a movie with Peter Pan. This is cool.
Another question for you about this. Like, you made a short and now you're looking at making it into a feature film. How do you finance something like this, like as an independent filmmaker?
So, yeah, I mean, that however you can is the short answer. I would say that
turning tricks in Vancouver.
Let me tell you, there's. I think I wouldn't be the first if I did.
he's hanging out on East Hastings Street. You know,
exactly. If there is, I would be far from the first to get a movie made that way, I'm sure. But yeah, honestly, it's a combination of things with this one. Like, I mean, a lot of it is this private funding, investors. Ideally, you find that one high net worth individual who can just, you know, foot the bill for the whole thing, and then you go. Because essentially, what we're doing is we're just making a product, right? And we make it and try to sell it for more than we make it for. And so that's kind of the high level pitch of it. So I, you know, for raising for expiry date here, that's been it. It's just been call every rich person I've ever met and see if they want to invest in film. And lucky for me, so far people have been receptive, and we're, when we were kind of looking at shooting back in Tisdale, we've started to explore that. And there's also one of the great things about shooting in Canada is just the grants and the tax credit programs that pretty much every province has. And I think that that's something that I'm trying to do. I think too many, you're going to get me on a rant here, but I think that too many Canadian films, you know, are so worried about just being Canadian, and they take the government funding and they make it, you know, make a little movie, and they don't, we don't commoditize it. We don't get it out into the world in the way that, that enough people get to see it. And I think that that's kind of something that I'm trying to change, is like, there's a lot of great Canadian movies that just don't get out wide enough. So we're essentially, yeah, we're funding it, like I said, with private investment, and then also through the grant and tax credit programs. Like I said, in Saskatchewan, it's a grant. We're working with Creative Sask on that one. They cover a percentage, and then yeah, try to commoditize it like they do in the U.S. and sell it to a Netflix, an Amazon, a Hulu, a Tubi. Essentially sell it like any other product that you would sell anywhere else. And that's kind of the process that we're going through. That's the way that I've seen it done through these first couple of films. And that's the way that we're going through it. And we're so lucky in Canada to have those grants and those tax credits that can help cushion the blow for investors and for the filmmakers and give it a shot to really be profitable. And yeah, that's what we're working on here now.
Well, one thing I've heard in the past too is like, and I mean, I'm sure you would probably know this, but like when it comes to writing or making something, you know, if you write within like, oh, well, I don't know if I'm going to have a budget for this, you're kind of already having yourself written and made into a corner. You have to write or make and kind of have your idea of what you want to do, and then get your funding and find out what you can do. You know, if I'm kind of correct with that kind of idea, you know?
Yeah, that's how I did it. And like, that's exactly what we did even on the short film version. It was just like, I'm going to write this story and then we'll figure it out. If we got to cut 10 pages because we can't afford it, we got to cut 10 pages because we can't afford it. I would rather go that way. I'd rather write the story and then work from there. And I know there's a lot of people that'll come out and say the opposite though, that, you know, sometimes when you're working in the constraints, it can bring out the best in you because, you know, okay, this is what we got and this is how we have to make it work. So, I think it can be done either way, but yeah, I definitely lean that way, Noah, for sure. Like,
so was there 10 pages of a big alien fight scene you had to cut out? Just couldn't afford it?
That's in the feature. There's an alien fight scene. Oh, in the feature. Nice. I raise enough money, we'll get it.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
One quick question I had while watching the thing, and I'm not sure exactly if this is a thing, but there's the scene where they're at the arcade and they're playing, they're doing like the Mario Kart arcade machine. Does stuff like that, do you have to get rights for showing a Nintendo product, like showing the Mario Kart playing like on the screen? Does that cost money, or is it short enough? Is it like just kind of like,
yeah,
it's fine?
There's certain rules around it in either way. That one, I'm sure if that went wide enough, we'd get sued over that soon enough. I think that there, when you're dealing on like a more professional scale, and like when you're dealing with a sale of something, yes, you have to have everything tight. Like, they'll scrutinize every dollar that you spent, and you bought it, and what is this going to pass a quality control? Like, you have to, there's a lot of steps to dealing with it on that. On the short, like I said, it was about making the best thing we could make and getting as much out as we could. And so we're riding that out until we get sued.
Hey, publicity's publicity.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, like I said, with something on that scale, like something like a short film, I feel like, and there's certain festivals that would have limitations to it as well. Again, for us, we had some different Mario Kart sounds in there. We tried to do some like makeshift sounds. It just didn't work. And for us, you know, the point of it was kind of to pitch to make the feature, and that's kind of been it was truly a proof of concept to show this is what we can do with, you know, $10,000. Now give us $1 million and see what we can do. Like, that was really the point of it. So we really leaned into to make the best thing we could make. And but yeah, the wider things get, there is all kinds of complicated rules around that I will happily let the lawyers handle. I will not be getting too deep into those conversations, let me tell you. But yeah, there's definitely a ton of rules around all that.
Yeah, you're the content creator. Let the lawyers fight about the rest
of it. Oh, man, exactly. I let the favorite thing to do is pass the responsibilities off to the lawyer until I get the bill.
We had on a previous podcast, we had Adam Tex Davis, who wrote Just Friends and filmed in Moose Jaw and Regina with Ryan Reynolds. And yeah, he talked about the rewrites and having to, because of the locations and things, having to change the writing, or because one of the actors had to leave Canada, having to rewrite things on the go.
Nice. I didn't hear that. That's lovely. That would have been fun. It's part of it though. I mean, we're working on that with the expiry date feature right now. Like it's really, you want to make something good, you gotta scrutinize every word and every moment and how does this lead into this, and then, like you said, and then all of a sudden an actor's gone from the country. Okay, I guess we gotta rewrite that scene and make it just as good without that actor. It's part of the grind, but like I say to people all the time, it's nothing about this business is easy. Absolutely nothing. I mean, Martin Scorsese has to grind to get movies made. Like, nothing about this business is easy, but it is the most fun ever when it's going and when it's working. And even the grind, I have more fun on this grind than I probably would doing anything else. So
you mentioned that you wrote the short in like a night. You sat down and just poured it out. How long does it take to turn that into a full feature film script?
I think it depends on the person, depends on the situation. I mean, for me, I'm working on, I had written out the feature and then it continues to be a work in progress. For myself, I mean, I think it depends on the writer too. For myself, I don't think I've ever sat down and written more than 20 pages in a day or in a night. I just can't. It just doesn't seem to keep flowing after that. But I know some writers are maybe even less than that. Some writers can sit down and go, oh, I banged out 50 pages and I didn't look up from the computer and now it's been 24 hours. Like, whoopsie. I think it really depends on the actor, or sorry, on the writer. And, just to give some context on that too, they say roughly like a minute per page is kind of the, when you're, a 90 page script is a 90 minute movie essentially. So yeah, that gives some context on that. And yeah, for me, I break it all down. And I mean, maybe my writing process might be a little too boring to get into, but it took definitely, upwards of a month to even get anything down. And then you start fine tuning and it never really stops until you're done, until you're done shooting.
Do you have somebody that you give your script to that, to help you with it?
Yeah, I've got a couple of people that I work with. We've done some table reads, and then I'm working with a script consultant that I got introduced to through a producing partner of ours that has worked in the studio system down in the States for years and has written some pretty decently big movies, and then also has been consulting for years on that. And so that's been cool for me too, to kind of run it through a studio lens, because that's ultimately where we want to head to. This indie space is great, and it's something that, it's kind of where I'm at. But ultimately, I mean, the goal, like you said, like I was saying before, is to have your film seen as wide as it can be. So getting into the studio system is something that I definitely want to do down the line. I think learning how they look at things, and man, we're getting broken down into, audiences are kind of wired to expect, this every 15 pages, this happens, that happens. They're kind of expecting this way, that way, like, getting into that, all that, and how studios look at $100 million movies and applying it to our $1 million movie has been honestly a ton of fun, and I've learned a lot and it's been great. So yeah, that guy is a guy that I work with a lot, and then we do table reads constantly, and I've got some good actor friends who luckily will play with me, and they'll come read scenes and I can see what works and what doesn't, and yeah, it's a never-ending process.
I really, really hope that everything goes well. I hope you get the funding you need. Maybe a Seth Rogen will drop in and just say, hey, you know what? I love this. Here's $1 million. Make your movie. That would be awesome.
We're well on our way here. Like we're in the wheels are in motion. And I mean, that's always the hardest part, I think, of the movie is the raise. But we've, like I said, we've been really lucky so far with the interest that we have gotten early on, and I, like there's lots more coming, and that short helps, obviously. Like, you guys said some very kind words about the short, and I appreciate that, and that seems to be carrying us through. People have liked it, lucky for us, and so that's kind of given us an opportunity that we get to try again on a bigger scale here.
letting you know, you're not the first indie film that I've had at the Falcon Theater. I actually, when was that?
2023.
Yeah, I had Aaron Sinclair came and showed his movie The Wild. He's from Regina and made this feature film and showed it at the Falcon Theater.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I love that. I would be more than happy to show anybody's independent film.
Maybe your next project after retiring from this is running the Falcon Film Festival or something like that. The Triple F.
Falcon Film Festival. I like it.
Triple F. Yeah. How cool would that be? Yeah, that'd be sweet. No, that'd be so much fun. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so let's move on. What have we been watching lately? Let's move back into our regularly scheduled programming.
So the only really, I think, new movie that I've seen, I've been just so freaking busy this last month, but I got time to see the new Superman movie, and I really liked it. I'm not a big DC fan. Like, really, like, I like Batman. Batman's really the only DC media I've really ever kind of followed. I've never really liked Superman, but I really, really liked the James Gunn's, like, take on Superman. I thought it was, like, from the first bit of the movie, you know, Nicholas Holt as Lex Luthor, he was an unlikable, like, just whiny, rich kid, and it just was, I just hated him the whole thing, and you're cheering for you the movie starts with Superman at his lowest, essentially, and I thought they just did such a good job. Like, there wasn't a part of it that I felt I was bored with. I love just the whole story. Yeah, so that's really all I've seen last month. It was just highly recommend.
Listening to make sure you didn't tell me too much, because we're showing it this weekend at the Falcon Theater, April 8th to the 10th at 8 p.m. each night, the Superman movie. So I was hoping you wouldn't tell me too much, because I want to watch it this weekend.
Superman is in the movie.
And you ruined it.
And Rylan, in all your movie writing and busyness, do you get a chance to go and watch new films?
I do. I try to take in on as much as I can. I've got that... there's a Cineplex membership where it's like $10 a month or something, and you get like a movie ticket and 20% off concessions and whatever. So I dive into as much as I can, for sure. But I actually, last night, the first movie that comes to my mind that is recently that I've watched is Happy Gilmore 2, which I don't think I'm the only person that has recently watched that. Is that accurate?
I believe that more than two people have watched that on Netflix.
Oh man, that was a ride. I'm gonna leave it at that. That was a ride.
Enjoyed it. I liked all the Easter eggs and the throwbacks, and yeah, I really, really got a kick out of it.
It was pretty cool. It got a little bit wild at the end. It was a little bit wild, but yeah, no, it was pretty cool. And I mean, Adam Sandler is the man. Like, he's good. He's awesome.
Yeah, I agree. My wife and I have been at the lake quite a bit this summer, and at the lake we have an old 1996 motorhome. So in that motorhome is a TV VCR. So we went down to the Value Village and we bought a whole bunch of VHS tapes. So this past week I managed to watch on VHS Clear and Present Danger, starring Harrison Ford. And we started watching the original Alien, but I fell asleep because I'm too old to stay up that late.
Well, it's a slow burn Alien. Like, it doesn't really start getting deep in, like, the heart pumping until about halfway through.
Yeah, you're right. And I just couldn't do it. After Clear and Present Danger, I was all day out in the sun. I just couldn't do it.
You know, that actually, thinking about, like, Alien there, I was just remembering, so the one actor in... Alien, I actually just watched a movie with him about a month ago when I was at work. Harry Dean Stanton, who is like the one kind of engineer guy with the cap in Alien, a movie that he was in the 80s called Paris, Texas, which I've always heard a lot about, and so I finally got a chance to watch it. Another absolutely fantastic movie.
just hang on. I want to go back to what you were saying there when you were at work.
Yes, yes. not you know, having to pick people up off the floor. It was a very quiet night. So I think I might have had to watch it in three separate parts, but I was able to watch the full movie over a course of a night.
You weren't going, okay, shh, quit. I know your heart's bothering you, but I got to finish this part of the movie. Just give me a minute here.
I just tell them I'm doing paperwork behind them.
Yeah, little secrets. The little secrets you learn. Listen, I learned something.
Tips of the trade.
Yeah, no kidding.
Noah is a paramedic. I don't know if you know that.
I actually, as soon as you said that, I did know that. I knew that and then didn't, like, had forgotten that through the course of my life. And then when you said saving people or whatever you said, I was like, oh yeah, he's got a pretty important job for paying attention at, I think.
Sometimes it's important. I had to turn someone's bathtub off today. So.
Oh yeah. You're all across the board.
Well, that can be important too. You don't want to flood anything.
It was flooding everything. That's why I turned it off.
Okay, Noah, what do you know?
Okay, so I thought this was kind of interesting, and it's a bit of a short one, but I was reading, I don't even know how I got it. I think it was a TikTok had come up, and they were talking about, so the movie Lost in Translation by Sofia Coppola stars Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson. So Sofia Coppola, when she was writing the movie, again, we always write for what we know. She based the movie on her real relationship with director Spike Jonze. Years later, so I think it was like 98, I think it came out. Anyways, years later, Spike Jonze made his own movie, Her, starring Joaquin Phoenix, which was also inspired by his relationship with Sofia Coppola. So the movies Lost in Translation and Her are about the same relationship, but from different perspectives from each of the directors. And in both of the instances, Sofia Coppola is portrayed by Scarlett Johansson, either through the AI voice in Her or in the Lost in Translation movie.
No way.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting kind of, like, movies you wouldn't think are connected.
I actually have not seen either of those movies, so I really need to sit down and do a night where you sit down and you watch both those films.
A double feature, hey?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've seen Her years ago, and I think I've seen clips of Lost in Translation. I don't think I've ever sat down and watched the whole thing, but
I'm living Her now. ChatGPT fired me up with this voice assistant or something the other day. It just talks to me now. We're there.
It's actually, you're just talking to Sofia Coppola.
Yeah, like, man, I was like, it popped up. I was like, try this voice. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I've seen this in the movie. I don't think I want to do this.
Well, guys, I think we're going to finish things up. Oh, wait a minute. No, before we finish things up with our final question of the night, we need to know what's going on in Star Wars world, because there doesn't seem to be anything going on.
It's you know what, and I think it's for the best. Like, there was Andor season 2, which I don't know. Did we talk about that the last podcast?
We didn't, but I mean, it was.
I don't think it was done yet, but it was absolutely. I think I was coming down to see you, so I hadn't watched yet, but absolutely fantastic, especially that last three episodes. But after that, I don't think they're, like, Disney is kind of going back on how much they're making, which in my opinion is good.
Yeah, they needed to back off.
I'd prefer quality over quantity.
Marvel's doing the same thing. Like, the Fantastic Four are going to probably lose to Superman here. Like, I don't think Marvel's ever lost a head-to-head when they release a movie right around the same time with DC. Like, the Marvel, and they got a dialer back too, I think.
Well, they did well with the Deadpool Wolverine, but they have not been doing, pretty much since the Endgame came out, the movies have just been kind of getting less and less draw to the theaters.
Oh, I think, and they're blaming a lot of that on the TV stuff that they did, I think, too, right? Like, it's
so whoever's writing the check needs to, you know, figure out what they're doing. But yeah, I think Ahsoka season 2 is really the only thing they're making right now.
Yeah, so that's good, except it doesn't leave us much to talk about in the Star Wars world.
No, but you know what? We'll have more to talk about in the future.
Where do I start with Star Wars? I need some. I've seen the movies, but if all in all these shows, where do I start?
Oh God. Okay. How long do we have? Do we have another hour?
Mandalorian. Do I start with Mandalorian?
When it comes to the new shows like that Disney's come out with, I would say definitely The Mandalorian is your best starting point, because it kind of they almost call it the Mandoverse, a lot of the newer stuff that's come out, because besides a few of the ones they've done like The Acolyte and The Skeleton Crew, they're all kind of intertwined, like Ahsoka, Boba Fett, and Mandalorian, and then I believe they're working on Ahsoka season 2, but they're also working on the next movie, which is The Mandalorian and Grogu, which is going to kind of be like their Infinity War of all of these Star Wars TV shows that have been, you know, building. Andor season 1 and 2 are, you can kind of just watch it as its own thing. And I would say that's probably the best written and made out of all of the Star Wars stuff that Disney has done lately.
Yeah, Andor season 1 and 2, and then leads right into Rogue One. And you just, that's what the rest of it, like Mandalorian's great, but a lot of it is, I don't know. If you're not a huge fan, I don't know that it'll really connect with you. But if you're a movie person who appreciates good writing, Andor season two is amazing, and it leads right into Rogue One,
which leads right into A New Hope.
Good to know. Good to know. Thank you.
Okay, so we always like to end off our podcast with we call it the miscellaneous question. And Noah, you came up with this question today. What is an underrated movie that you wish more people would watch? And I'm going to start. I right away, as soon as I read this question, I was like, The Iron Giant. It is, in my opinion, one of the greatest animated movies that's ever been made, and most people have never even heard of it. So any chance I get to show people The Iron Giant, I show them The Iron Giant.
I really hope they never like remake it as a live action, because it's just, it has so much charm to it as an animated movie.
I'll have to check it. I've never actually seen that one. I'll have to check it out.
Exactly. Yeah.
See, I'm one of those people. Uh-oh.
Vin Diesel voices the Iron Giant, and it just didn't get a lot of press. It didn't get, and it is one of the greatest animated movies that's ever been made.
What year is that from?
I'll say 2001, I think.
Oh, like it's older. It's okay.
Huh. It's the first DVD that we bought as the Jansen family, because my intern at the time, Kent True, recommended it to us. We didn't even know about it. And he's like, oh, you need to get this one. $19.99.
I just looked it up to you at $99. So my pick, this is one I just saw, I think probably in the last couple of months. I just kind of saw it on, I think it was on Disney Plus, and I was like, oh, let's check it out. It was 1 Hour Photo. It's a movie with Robin Williams. I think it came out probably around the same time. I think it was like early 2000s, late 90s, around there. Because it's definitely dated. It's not a movie that can be made nowadays, because it's about a photo tech who works developing photo film at a superstore, which is, I don't think, a job that exists anymore. Now it's just like a little kiosk for anybody that still prints off their photos. But Robin Williams is this photo tech guy who is this family that keeps coming in to develop their photos. He becomes obsessed with the family, especially with the wife. And so every time they print off photos, he prints off his own copy and takes them home. And he has a whole wall in his house, and he lives through this family's photos in his house. He has like nothing else in his apartment, and all he does is obsess over this family. And as the story of the family and the movie progresses and everything, you find out that, you know, just not through the photos, but the family's not as perfect as you would believe. But Robin Williams, like, he doesn't really play a goofy character or a serious character. He's a very creepy, like, kind of just like the incel, like,
yeah, I remember him freaking me out,
just kind of a weirdo. And it's a very different role to see him play in, kind of almost like a thriller. And again, it just shows his range as an actor of what he could do. And I was just watching and I'm like, this is just such a unique movie for Robin Williams to have been in, you know. So that would be my pick for underrated, because I don't think you ever hear people talk about that in their, you know, Letterboxd top 4 movies, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, I don't know if it's necessarily underrated, but I'm going to go back to what I was talking to earlier, Grand Budapest Hotel. I think it needs to stay around as a classic. I think the way that that is done, the way it's shot, the story, the just everything. I think that's my favorite Wes Anderson movie, and like I said, that's my favorite movie, period. And I think that movie needs to stay in the front of people's minds because it's creative, it's different, it's unique, it's intense, it's hilarious.
I would definitely say that's probably like Wes Anderson's most like Wes Anderson film. Like if someone were to be like, oh, well, what's a Wes Anderson movie like? You would show them that movie because that hits every single mark of how he frames and writes. Like you said, like that is the most quintessential Anderson film that you could describe.
Yeah, I just don't. It doesn't have a weakness, and they didn't have a whole ton of money to do it either. Like it just, it man, it, yeah, it does. It's hilarious and intense and heartfelt and peak Anderson, and looks beautiful.
What was the newest one he just did? The Phoenician Scheme.
Yeah, Phoenician
was it?
Scheme. I haven't actually seen that one yet.
I haven't seen that. I wanted to watch that one.
I had somebody ask if we were bringing it into the theater, but it's a little too obscure for the Falcon Theater.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's
fair. I agree, but Grand Budapest Hotel, I remember watching it and I absolutely loved it because I love character and that movie has a ton of character in it. But I remember at the time thinking like this is not a movie for the masses. This is a great movie, but it's not a movie that the masses are going to love, right? Because it's just so unique and different.
What do the masses know?
Yeah, the masses don't know anything. Back to your movie, Noah, about 1 hour photo. I actually remember that movie vaguely. I watched it probably once when it first came out. Loved it. It's interesting now. I think about it now, like how he, you know, pictured the perfect family in the photos. And now, like with Facebook and social media, we see every
influencer culture type thing.
No, but we see our friends and family posting these pictures and what they're doing looks so amazing. But, you know, all we see is their best. We don't see, nobody posts their worst moments on Facebook.
And I think they might even say that in the movie. I can't remember, but there's something like, you know, no one ever takes a photo of the worst day of their life.
Yeah, exactly. And so when we're looking at social media and we're maybe a little bit jealous of, you know, what these people have or whatever, just remember that you're only looking at people's best moments.
Beautiful send off. That is correct.
Little PSA at the end of the Falcon Theater podcast.
How do we follow that? That was.
I think everyone needs to post pictures of the most like them at the graveyard visiting grandpa. Post the saddest day of your life in the comments so we can see how sad everyone is.
Yeah, and then a picture of yourself crying and how honest. Yeah, love it.
Funny, Noah, you talk about that like. You know how many times I've been to your grandpa's graveside since we buried him?
How many times?
Once. Well, since like after the funeral, we were at another funeral and I'm like, oh, I should go see how dad's doing. So I went there, but it's like, I don't know. For me, it's like he's not there. So I just have no desire to go there. And back to the whole cancer thing, Rylan, my father passed away from cancer a number of years ago. So when I watched that, it actually, I mean, my dad wasn't 29. He was in his 60s, but I felt some of that when I watched your short. So I just wanted to point that out as well.
And actually, that was we're going a little bit longer here, but I do want to go back to that too. Like with doing my job, I've come across people that, again, some have been younger and some have been older, and there's been people we've gone to, and their family wants them to go to the hospital, and they're just kind of like, no, I know I have cancer, I know what's wrong with me. Why would I go to the hospital? If I go to the hospital, I'm not leaving. So I don't want to go, you know, and it's kind of going to be a little bit awkward because I'm like the family. I'm like, I can't kidnap this person. You know, I have to respect their wishes. And if there's been people I've gone to that are actively having a heart attack. And I'm like, you understand if you stay home, you could die. And they're like, okay. They're like, I'm 80 years old. I don't care. If I die, I die. I lived a long life, you know, and it's sometimes a little strange, like having to have that conversation and then be with the family. It's like, call us back later if something happens, you know, because we can't force the hand, you know. So I've seen that specifically from people before, you know, and people who sometimes are the decisions, maybe they're not making the best decision, you know, anyways. Like maybe it's something that is entirely preventable, but they're choosing not to, you know. And again, at the end of the day, it's their life and their decision is in their hands, you know.
Yeah, I think there's so much to it. And I think that until you've been there or been very close to it, I guess, you know, in my case, it's hard to understand a lot of that. Or in your case, I think that's what we're trying to do with the movie, is to show the many different ways that it can go, because it's really hard to grasp what that's like, being told you're going to die until you're there, you know. So that's kind of what we're exploring and going to live life in the meantime.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight, Rylan. This has been a fabulous episode of the Falcon Theater Podcast. Really appreciate having you here, and hope everybody keeps their eyes out for Expiry Date, the movie that's hopefully will be coming out in the not too distant future.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. This has been cool. It's been fun. I love talking movies.
Yeah, we'll have to maybe have you back again sometime.
Yeah, I will be available for sure. Like I said, especially while I'm on vacation here, you hit me up. I can find the time. But yeah, no, this has been great, guys. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.